From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's a rainy Friday, September 20th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gonna chish, hawa, duaksuk nusum, salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, we preview the upcoming Second Crossing Public Forum happening next Monday at the Elizabeth Perachovich Hall. We chat with the Juno Commission on Sustainability, who is having a session next week on the interaction of one of Juno's favorite topics, bears and trash. And we chat with Pat White from the Jensen Olsen Arboretum about the upcoming ribbon-cutting ceremony for the new accessibility path. Those conversations, plus Star Party and more, coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This coming Monday, September 23rd at 6 p.m., the community is invited to attend the Second Crossing Public Forum. It's all about getting information and public comment on a proposed crossing from Douglas Island. Lots of different organizations will be represented. And among them is the Mendenhall Wetlands Study Group, and I'm joined by two members of the group now, Ron Somerville and Brenda Wright. Gunath Chi, Shaye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio this afternoon on this rainy, rainy day. Wasi Iti, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm glad you're dry.
I am dry. I've been inside all day. Lucky me. So that's good. So welcome. First off, I just want to say as we begin this conversation that we're not talking today about whether or not there should or should not be a crossing. That's a debate that's been going on for decades, and further conversation around that will surely continue. What we're here to talk about today is what this forum is. What's going to be discussed at this forum, who will be there at the forum, and those kinds of topics. So I just wanted to put that out there as a sort of disclaimer. So let's talk about this. What is this Second Crossing Public Forum that's going to be happening on Monday, Ron?
Well, thank you, Boston. Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. The Mendenhall Wetlands Study Group was created here in Juneau. So it consists of 20-some professional people, primarily dealt with the refuge in a variety of forms, including some people who've been looking at our wetlands area out here for 30 or 40 years and doing scientific work on it. The purpose was to create a group that would participate in this particular activity of going through the process of examining possible crossing routes and making a recommendation, which the city of CBJ, Juno, requested the Department of Transportation participate with. They have contracted with Dowell to do this study, and it's called the Pell Study, to, in essence, involve the public, get different ideas, and essentially examine each of the potential crossing routes and make recommendations, which would eventually go through the EIS NEPA process.
I see. Okay. And that PL is the Planning and Environmental Linkages Study. It's something that, as you mentioned, the DOT and CBJ have contracted with the engineering firm Dowell. And so now, Brenda, let's get clear on, for those who may not know, what is the wetlands? What is the Mendenhall Wetlands?
Yeah, that lovely area that's flat between Douglas and the mainland that changes color so gorgeously in the spring and fall. And it's actually a home for thousands and thousands of different animals, birds, insects. And the wetland is a wetland because it is mostly wet.
And I know you've been on the show before in your role at the Juneau Audubon Society, and we've talked about various different things. You have the wetlands cleanup that happens once a year, and we talk about all the species and the birds that are out there on the wetlands. Okay, so how did this particular forum come about? Why did we decide to do the forum now?
Well, originally, when it started, it was indicated, projected to be a year and a half study before we go on to the NEPA EIS process, Environmental Impact Statement. And it's been almost 3 years. And we get complaints, I'm talking about we people who are involved with this thing, from members of the public who say, we don't have the faintest idea what's going on. You know, have they made a recommendation? You know, what's the issues that are being concerned? Why are they seem to be selecting this over that one? So we said the best thing we can do, which we went to the Territorial Sportsman and said, could you help us sponsor a forum? Now, we did this, you may have remembered, 3 years in a row on king salmon. We called it a symposium to help the public understand why our king salmon stocks are in such bad shapes. And it worked out very well. And so we went ahead with this forum, again, to communicate with the general public in Juneau and advise them of what's going on and how they can get involved.
Okay, great. And who's going to participate in the forum? I know there's going to be some various different organizations that are there, as well as, you know, the public being able to have comments and feedback. Who's going to be leading it and who will be there, Brenda?
Well, a retired fish and game person, Matt Robus, will actually be the MC and the introducer. But we'll have people like Richard Karstensen and other folks that have studied on the wetlands for many years, over 20, and people with a great deal of knowledge about our refuge and how it's used by all the different critters. And it's always really important to mention, too, that it's an important bird area. We only have three of those in Southeast Alaska. And one of the ways you qualify is to produce enough food for migratory birds that it makes it more than 5% of the entire population of that bird stops here on their way somewhere else during migration. And those are very, very important critical habitats.
Oh, wow.
So when we're talking about a wetland the size of this refuge, over 3,700 acres or so, we're talking about a great feast for birds traveling through both north and south.
I see. And Ron, I know that you were one of, or did you draw the original maps of the wetlands back in the 70s? Is that attributed to you?
Frankly, it was a strange coincidence, but yes, I had come back, got my master's degree in wildlife management, University of Montana, came back to work for the department, and I was assigned to a group in the game division at the time, handling access issues, critical issues. We push a lot of different types of options for public. Areas like refuges and special areas like, anyway, yes, Jim Brooks, was director, called me up and said, come to Juneau, we're going to make a proposal for a refuge here in the wetlands to save some of these key areas. And so I did that.
And that was when you were working for
Fish and Game.
Fish and Game. Okay. And so what did you discover when you were making the maps? What did you find?
One, you have an airport right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
which may, you know, it has an impact, good or bad. I mean, obviously good for Juneau to have an airport. It's one of the few areas around that's fairly flat. But it was a complex thing. We have a lot of private property around the edges, some of which have been picked up now by SALT, Southeast Alaska Land Trust, to eventually become part of the refuge. So, yeah, it was a very complicated process. I thought we had lost it. I ended up debating Department of Transportation on the route. They wanted to go around Sunny Point rather than inside like it is right now. We said, dude, that's going to really not be good for the refuge. And we essentially won that one. However, it kind of stalled. It was interesting. I got a notice. I was working out of Anchorage at the time. And they said, you know, the refuge bill is stalled. And I said, well, I can come back to Juneau. And he said, well, there's some high school kids here that are up there lobbying the legislature right now and CPJ to go ahead and approve the refuge. And they were successful, frankly, in pushing it through.
Wow. That was back in the 70s?
Yep.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And Brenda, what's your history with the wetlands?
Well, since it became a refuge in 1976, that wasn't the first time it was an important bird area. But as it's grown with uplift and the change of vegetation, we have this wonderful map that shows you all the different types of vegetation and how they changed with uplift. And that tells you exactly how much property is available out there for more birds or different types of birds. And so the refuge is a wonderful place to bird, hunt, fish, walk. It's our public place. It's our public park.
Yeah, that's amazing. So who makes up the Mendenhall Wetlands Study Group? How did the study group come about? I know that Ron mentioned it a little bit in terms of that. But Ron, I know that the PEL study was there. How old is the Mendenhall Wetlands Study Group and who decided to get it together? Was it you?
Well, I was one of them. Yeah, we talked amongst ourselves, went through the recommendations from CBJ relative to getting this going again. I went to Territorial Sportsman, I think I mentioned that, and said, we need to get a hold of our membership and create this group who can scientifically assess this whole process as it go forward to develop a recommendation for a site for a crossing. And then they agreed to support it. And from there on, it was just a matter of contacting as many people as we could to see if they were interested in serving. And like I say, we've got over 20-some professionals on the group.
Now, is the group an advisory committee to the CBJ and the DOT, or is it a separate organization?
Well, it's a separate, non-registered organization. We don't even have presidents and vice presidents and all that stuff. It's just a group that gets together and we decide collectively how to approach certain aspects of this thing as we comment. Sorry. Oh.
That's okay. Thank you for turning the phone off. How did it, what spurned the idea to get together? What was that idea?
Well, I had seen the CBJ's priority listing for capital projects, and the first one, of course, was the crossing.
I see.
And I said, eventually they're going to contract with somebody to do another study. And that, I think, convinced people that we needed to do something ahead of time rather than waiting until something happened.
Until a decision was made.
Yeah.
So in essence, you're sort of taking on the role of kind of a monitor. This group sort of monitors what's happening, and this forum is a way to keep the public aware of what's happening. Brenda, is that the idea?
Right. And for a very long time, the refuge has a citizen action committee, and that's an advisory committee, just like the Wetland Review Board or other things like that for CBJ. But this is for the refuge, and they reactivated that too because of the second crossing. People that were concerned about what might happen to the refuge or the effects of any of these crossings on the refuge wanted to have this Citizens Action Committee started again, and it started again last year.
I see. So there is a Citizens Action Committee that they have in place, and then I'm just trying to get the sense of this. And then the Wetlands Group, Study Group, is like an additional, not necessarily official group, but they are there to also, this concerned scientists and all the folks
right.
you have. Which,
and with their conjoined and educate knowledge about the refuge and all the different fields that they've worked in, give a lot of information to the Citizens Action Committee.
I see. So it's great to have a coalition of people getting together and all bringing their skills and knowledge into play. So where are we in the process now? Can you speak to that in terms of what we're still in the PEL study and they're still about, and there's some options that have become on the table, right, in terms of what they might do with the crossing? And it is the idea that you want to discuss those options and what those impacts might be, the various options and what they would do to the wetlands?
That will be part of what is brought up on Monday. I think we've been restructuring the agenda mainly because, as you're aware, the four agencies who were originally going to participate chose not to. We're going to approach it more from the standpoint then we're going to go ahead with a public forum to inform the public of what has happened to date, what is on the horizon, and how much they need to participate if they're interested in what happens to the refuge and the wetlands.
I see. So Monday is really going to be an informational session where people can find out, because it may be unclear for folks, right? It may be unclear. We've heard so many different aspects of it, and we may not know what's actually happening. So you're going to, on Monday, be able to sort of detail what the process has been and where it is, and then take some information maybe from the public as well in terms of their thoughts on it. And so where can people find out more information about the wetlands group? And I'm sure on some of the information that you have there, you're detailing some of the various different impacts that might be for the various options. I'm sure that's on people's minds too, like what happens if we go this way versus this way, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the best place for people to go and find out more? Is it the heartofjuno.org website?
Yes. Correct.
Okay. That's the best place to go. So great. Well, it's an amazing thing that you're putting together. I'm glad that you're opening this up to the public, and it's the Mendenhall Wetlands Study Group. They're going to be taking the time on Monday night at Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall at 6 p.m. And it is open to the public, and everyone who attends will have an opportunity, if they so desire, to give their comments, right, in terms of what's happening. And you said it will be moderated by
Matt Robeson.
Robes. And so that's happening. All right, great. Well, I really appreciate you coming in today to tell me a little bit about this, to let the community know that it's happening. And if folks are interested, to show up on Monday at Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall at 6 o'clock. And the work you've done, your history, both of you, in working in the state of Alaska and in the various areas that you work on, that's very valued and honored, and we really appreciate it. Gunnith Cheese, for all that work that you've done, Ron and Brenda, over the years.
Thank you, Boston.
Thank you for promoting us.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to have you in here. So thank you so much. Okay, this is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Up next, we're going to talk about bears and trash. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edie have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Die. And when they write this history, I'll take the moral victory. Wasn't I right at the center of all that this country could be? Wasn't I right? Wasn't I?
Was a little Molly Lele with Pantsuit Sasquatch. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Next Wednesday, September 25th at 6 p.m. at Harborview Elementary, the Juno Commission on Sustainability will host a session. It's all about bears and trash and how you can minimize conflicts. You can find out more on the Sustainable Juno Facebook page. And here to tell us more are Nick Waldo, chair of the commission, and Abby McAllister, wildlife education and outreach specialist in the Division of Wildlife Conservation at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Thank you so much for coming into the studio. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasiti, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks, Abby. How about you, Nick? How you doing?
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
glad to talk to you and get people excited to come out and learn even more about bears and trash next week.
I love that. And Abby, I was making fun there, but you have a long title.
I sure do. I mean, in short, it's my job to just kind of talk to folks regionally and statewide about how to, you know, coexist with our four-legged furry creatures and that we are blessed to live with here in Alaska.
Absolutely. And I know a lot of folks in Juneau, myself included, have... let's call them issues with bears and trash and how that works. But first, Nick, let's remind people, what is the Juneau Commission on Sustainability, or JCOS? As I don't know, what do you guys call it for short?
Yeah, JCOS is what most people refer to us as, because, you know, speaking of long titles, Juneau Commission on Sustainability is a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah.
We're an advisory board appointed by the City Assembly to advise the Assembly and the city government broadly on matters of sustainability. And that definition is kind of intentionally vague. You know, it's really environmental sustainability is the focus, but that also, you know, by necessity touches on other things of, can we keep doing things the way that we're doing them? And, you know, people in Juneau really value living in a place surrounded by wildlife like bears that makes life richer here. But it's not sustainable if those bears are getting into trash and causing problems. And so that's kind of what our angle is here of how can we share this space with them in a sustainable fashion?
Yeah. So what does that look like, Abby, in terms of, I mean, bears are going to be here. They're, besides in the winter, right? They're going to go hibernate and do the thing they do. But then in the summer and the spring, and we see them, especially in Juneau with so many, I guess, homes that are more in the woods or a little less, you know, present, right? There might be more bear activity. So what does it mean for, in terms of sustainability with bears and trash?
Sure. No, that's a really good question. And, you know, one of the things that I'm always telling people is, you know, bears are just going to really try to do what bears do. And they're really driven by two things, food and procreation. And they need to have both. They need to have fat reserves built up for winter. And they need, in order to, for the females to reproduce, they have to have enough fat stores to get them through the winter and also fuel a pregnancy. And so that is their driving factor. And they are looking solely for calories. And so, you know, if they have the option to choose your leftover pizza versus that clump of blueberries, you know, calorically, they're going to go for that pizza because it has the most reward.
Me too.
Right? And so if they are given the opportunity to have that reward once, not only are they driven by that caloric reward, but also they are creatures of habit. I call them opportunistic omnivores. And so they will go the easy way whenever they can. And if they've had a reward one in one area, they will come back again and again. So how do we coexist and how do we do it in a sustainable way? Well, it's really up to us to just kind of take that extra step as Alaskans, as Juneau residents, to just secure our trash. And, you know, we can do that in a variety of ways. Mainly it's, you know, securing your trash in a very secure structure. And waiting truly until the day of pickup to put your trash out, right? And that sounds really simple. And for some in town, they do a good job and it works well. But for others, sometimes that's just not the option. And so what we try to do as a department, especially from communication standpoint, is help give people additional tools to help do the right thing. And that might be, you know, investing in a bear-resistant container or investing in like a ratchet strap to help keep that container upright and secured and latched shut. Because not everybody has a garage or a secure structure to put their, you know, trash in. And just helping to educate people when to call us. You know, a bear walking through town is just a bear walking through town because they will. I mean, we placed ourselves smack dab in their habitat, right? So they're going to wander through. But, you know, we also help educate people about like, when is a bear maybe learning a bad habit? And then it's like, okay, let's go talk to the folks. Can we help them start doing the right thing? Because if we do secure our trash, if we do take away those opportunities for food sources like birdseed too and pet food and chicken feed and, you know, then they'll go find food elsewhere because really, in the end, they're just looking for calories.
That's what they're looking for. And I know that some people may still have, and I think the the cities or, you know, whoever's doing the trash, air refuse, or whoever is doing a pretty good job of getting people the newer cans, mm-hmm. right? But that might be one thing if you still have some of the older style cans that maybe don't shut as well, mm-hmm. or they don't latch as well, or if your latches are broken, or because they do, they break, right? Over time, those cans are going to break, and they will get, you can get replacements, right, Nick? You can get replacements for those, and that's one thing that somebody can do.
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, the trash pickup, it is done by a private company, but the city absolutely wants to see people using cans in good shape that have that lockable lid so that the bears can't just knock it over and have everything immediately spill out.
Yeah. So I have a question about this. So the cans are one thing, right? But I know that a lot of folks also have composts.
Sure.
Right? And so is there advice around compost? Because that's definitely something that people want to do for sustainability. I mean, obviously what you're putting in your trash as opposed to your compost. So Abby, is there any sort of thoughts about composting and what you should do to protect yourself from the bears?
Yeah, absolutely. So we really advise people not to put, and I think composting in general, this is kind of a rule. You don't put meat scraps in there. You know, you can put eggshells, but you wouldn't necessarily throw your ribs in there or like necessarily some of that, those actual meat scraps. If you have a compost, we recommend it's a hot compost so that it's actively kind of breaking down. And we do recommend that you invest in a bear resistant compost container. One of the best ones I've ever seen is this round kind of planet shaped compost bin and you do have to turn them, right? Mm. So it makes it easy to turn, but also, bears can't get into it. They can't like find a way in. I have this great video of this mother bear and she's just like determined to get into it and she can't, and she's hugging it and rolling it around. And she, you know, ends up giving up. Meanwhile, the video is so great because it shows her cubs in these like berry bushes, just going to town, just loving it. And, in the end it shows a success story because this bear resistant compost bin. She tries to get in. The smells are there. She can't. She moves on and they go about their merry way. So really a hot compost. And if you can get your hands on a bear resistant compost container, that's ideal.
Bear resistant compost container. Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. Now here's another thing I think that people do, which I don't know if is helpful or not. You wouldn't do this in your compost, of course, but I feel like I've heard people say, oh, I'll put detergent in my trash, or I'll sprinkle something in there that doesn't smell as good as the rib meat that's in there. Is that helpful at all?
It is. It's, you know, anecdotally, I'm sure that people have situations where it has helped, but bears, one of their best senses is their sense of smell.
Yeah.
And so they are really attracted to anything that has a scent. So you throw some Pine Sol in there, they're going to go check it out. You throw people have said mothballs, they're going to go check it out because that has a scent. Even bleach, has a scent. And so really the best thing you can do is just keep that container as clean as you can, mm-hmm. and also inside a secure structure. That's really the best thing to do because they are driven by their nose, no question.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Nick, the JCOS, or the Juno Commission on Sustainability, has been doing a lot of different programming over the last year or so, for sure, and different kinds of talks, different kinds of public access forums for sustainability issues. How did you decide to do this particular one?
So, as you said, we've been doing a lot of different topics, and I wanted to jump in there because last spring we were doing a lot of focused on solid waste issues and composting in Juno. So to hear that brought together with the bear issue just, made my heart warm, because composting is a great thing you can do, whether you're doing it in your own backyard or there is a local company that does commercial composting. The city is working on a municipal composting facility that'll be up and running in a few years. So bears came across our radar this summer because the number of incidents being reported of kind of undesirable bear-human interactions is going up. Mm. And so this was an unusually high summer of bear activity, and we were aware of this. We started hearing about it, and, we're not bear experts. That's why we're here talking to Abby. And so we wanted to get her, and we're also going to have a researcher from UAF in the room come in and talk a little bit about, what might be going on. Why is this a hot topic right now?
Yeah, absolutely. And that that guest speaker you also have is Binta Wold. Is that right? UAF Research. I love her title as well. Research Assistant on Human-Bear Conflict. Like, it's an actual, I mean, it is a thing, right? It is a thing. So that's kind of cool. So what can we expect at the session? Again, it's next Wednesday at 6 p.m. at Harborview Elementary. What can we expect next Wednesday?
We're going to have both of our guests start off by giving presentations on what they do. You know, Abby will introduce herself again. Binta will present some of her research. You know, this is academic, you know, peer-reviewed stuff going out there to try and understand this better. And then after we've heard their presentations, there'll be a question and answer session. And that'll be both live in the room, and I'll also be monitoring the online chat on an iPad, and I'll be asking them those questions.
Oh, excellent. So it's going to be online as well.
Yes, we stream all these sustainability sessions on Zoom.
Okay, and I'm sure you can find the link for that at the Sustainability Facebook page, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the best thing to do. The Sustainable Juno Facebook page is where you can find that. Okay, so another question for you, Abby, in terms of human-bear conflict. So let's say I come outside my house, whether it's at night or in the morning or whenever, and I hear that sound that we love to hear, which is, you know something's going on. What do you do?
Sure. Well, I mean, the first thing that you do is you definitely want to discourage the bear from doing what it's doing. Whether it's your trash can or your neighbors, you know, discourage them from a safe distance. And whether it's banging pots and pans or, you know, your neighbors won't love it, but an air horn, something to tell that bear that they're not welcome there. Now, you might run into a situation because our bears are somewhat habituated, which means that they are used to our presence. It may look at you and keep on doing what it's doing. And in that case, you know, I would maybe level up a little bit and really just like do something that you haven't done before, whether it's like a louder noise or a different noise, and see what happens. If that persists, there's a couple things you can do. You can call Alaska Department of Fish and Game because we do want to know if this has happened before. If this is like a repeated issue, you can call Alaska Department of Fish and Game. But the other thing you can do, and we do recommend this, is you call the non-emergency Juneau Police Department line, because if it is a repeated offense, then that is a violation of the city ordinance. A Juneau police officer a community officer will come out and just do a little talk with a neighbor or talk with, you know, whoever it is that needs to talk.
Thought you were talking that.
No, to the bear.
The bear's repeatedly offending me.
Right. No, I mean, that's a situation where if the bear is getting into the trash, it means that it's gotten a reward like that before. And for whatever reason, you know, it's hitting this trash can, and it's worth, you know, having a conversation with, you know, your neighbor. If you're uncomfortable with doing that, a community service officer can talk with the neighbor about like better ways to you know, discourage the bear. Maybe that's putting your garbage out a little bit later in the morning. And maybe it's, you know, a variety of different things that they could do.
Now, I know that I've seen this on various different social media posts and stuff. I know that there is an ordinance in place that says, yes, you can't put your can out. And if you leave your can out, you'll be fined. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, a lot of folks are like, well, the police department doesn't have time to necessarily go around looking for those kinds of violations unless they have absolutely nothing to do, which seems, you know, unreasonable. So but the best advice is, because I know some people are like, I don't want to get up at 5:30 in the morning and take my can out, right? But that is the best advice, not to put it out the night before. Even if you think you're in an area that is not that accessible, or if you've never had that experience happen. I was driving on the road the other day and I saw somebody who'd put it out the night before, and boom, it was all over the road. And that was unfortunate, right? And maybe you don't think they're going to get at the road. They're not going to go to the road because of the car sounds. But like you said, they're running on instinct, right?
They're running on habit, and they're just looking for calories. And honestly, you know, the bears in this city, the ones who have learned where they can get that high caloric, you know, reward, they know when trash day is. They absolutely have memorized trash day.
Right.
North Douglas trash day is Monday. And I tell you what, when I'm going to work on a Monday morning, anybody who put their can out overnight, it's over the road.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not ideal. I get it. But again, like I said earlier, as Alaskans, as people living in Juneau, we do have that extra responsibility and we get to choose how we view our wildlife. You know, do we want to view our wildlife doing all of its wild things, you know, catching fish in Steep Creek? Or do we want to run into these issues in town that really, it's not the bear's fault. They're just doing what bears do as a way to survive and get through the winter. So it really kind of falls on us to help them make good choices, essentially.
Is there any place online that we can go for advice besides coming to the sustainability session?
Absolutely. So alaskabears.alaska.gov is a one-stop shop for all things bear-related. It's dense, I'm not going to lie, but everything that you could ever possibly want to know on how to coexist with bears exists there. Whether it's camping, whether it's fishing, whether it's living in an urban area, alaskabears.alaska.gov.
Well, and I really appreciate that website because so many government websites have so many slashes at the end of the URL that it's hard to find it. But so making one short like this, alaskabears.alaska.gov is where you can go. And you can also go next Wednesday, September 25th at 6 p.m. to Harborview Elementary, where you can hear Abby and Binta talking at this Juneau Commission on Sustainability session. It will also, if you can't make it to the school, it will be streamed and I'm assuming archived as well.
Nick? That's right. Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Abby. Thank you so much, Nick, for coming in and telling us all about it. Again, you can learn more at the Sustainable Juneau Facebook page, not just about bears and trash, but about all kinds of things and the other sessions that the Juneau Commission on Sustainability has hosted. They're also available there. Keep up the great work. Thank you so much, Nick. Thank you, Abby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Up next, we will chat with the Juneau Olson Arboretum having a celebration on the new accessibility path. That's coming up on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. But first, we'll have a little star party.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about climate change. The planets Venus and Mars, which are rocky planets like the Earth, have also had climate change. In the distant past, 4-3 billion years ago, both our neighboring rocky planets had surface oceans. Presently, the surface of Venus is a hellscape and the surface of Mars is a frozen desert. So why is it they lost their surface oceans while Earth's surface ocean is still stable? In the case of Venus, there was catastrophic volcanism, which generated enormous amounts of carbon dioxide, which is what is called the greenhouse gas. So the light energy from the sun is absorbed by the greenhouse gas. And as more greenhouse gas is generated by erupting volcanoes, there's an increase in temperature. And the result for Venus is the current surface temperatures of Venus are close to 900 degrees Fahrenheit. The Soviets landed a mission in the 80s, Venera 13. It lasted for 2 hours before it burnt up. Climate change on Venus. Now, Mars in the distant past, like Venus, 3-4 billion years ago, had surface oceans. The evidence of that is seen on the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter photos. What happened to Mars? It's half the size of Earth. It cooled down and its liquid iron core became solid. And there was no longer a magnetic field being generated, which meant the solar radiation, the solar wind from the sun, stripped away the atmosphere. And that led to the planet Mars being a frozen desert. This is Steve Kosas, Marie Drake Planetarium. Our shows are on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Mark your calendars, Juno. KTOO Public Media has turned 50, and we're throwing an unforgettable all-night concert celebration. Food trucks will keep you fueled as you enjoy 20 artists you know and love spread across three stages at the Jack and KTOO's broadcast studio. Bring your friends, your family, bring your love of music and community. Get your tickets now at ktoo.org. 50 Fest, sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. Let's celebrate 50 years of community together.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. I'm joined now by Pat White with the Friends of the Jensen Olsen Arboretum with some news and an awesome event to celebrate that news. Gunath Cheesh, Hai Yigudi, thank you so much, Pat, for coming in. It's a pleasure to see you again. Wasa Iti, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for fitting me in.
Of course, absolutely. So tell us what's going on.
Well, all summer we've been, we got a grant last spring to build a hard paving sidewalk for those that have mobility challenges. And the grant was from AERP. I was here in the spring with Linda Kruger talking all about it. We got the money. We got the contractor. It's all made. It's all in. And so we're going to have a ribbon cutting for this project. And we'd like to invite anybody and everybody who wants to show up next Saturday, the 28th, at 1 o'clock at the Arboretum. And if you need a chair, please bring a chair because we have very limited chairs. But we'll have tents for the bad weather. We'll have refreshments, goodies, coffee, tea, and some speakers, myself and three or four other people who are integral in the process and in the project.
Wow, that's awesome. So it sounds like it came together really fast because I know when you were here in the spring, you had the grant, but did you also need additional funds as well?
No, we had the grant. We had saved money.
You had saved money already.
And we had a generous donation from a family.
Okay.
And so we had all that we needed, and we had the contractor lined up, Friendly Islands Construction Company, and they finished the project in just a couple of weeks, and it looks wonderful. And I like to say that now people can come up and sit on a bench or in their wheelchair or their walker or whatever, and look out over Pearl Harbor and see the gardens and the water. And it's a nice thing. It's phase one because it's just an out and back, so to speak. We hope to make a loop trip for others next year. But this is all we could kind of put together this year.
Okay, so for those who haven't been out to the Jensen Olsen Arboretum recently, mm-hmm. I was out there this summer, mm-hmm. but... So tell us where the path, what is it, what is the path, mm-hmm. and where is it going to?
It starts at the parking lot, and we have a hardscape paver up to the garden shed. And then from the garden shed up to the old apple tree, it's about 100 feet. So now we have a kind of a meandering path. We've reconstructed the platform where the bench was on, so it's much bigger. Then we have some steps going down to the veggie garden. We will, like I said, next year make another path so there's more accessibility. So it's 100 feet plus of people being able to move through the lawn. Where you were last summer, that's got a paved path right in the middle of it.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, mm-hmm. so because I know that there was that cool, there's that archway mm-hmm. and that sort of entrance. So mm-hmm. it's like an extension of that? Is that?
No.
No, it's a separate.
You know where the little shed is
yeah.
by the house?
Yeah.
It starts right at the, if you face it, the left side of it and goes up to the old apple tree.
Okay. So do people, if someone is needing to use the accessibility path, do they park at the parking lot, or can they drive in a little bit?
No, they drive down. Right, there's two.
And they can get out, and then they're right there at the garden shed, basically.
And there's two or three parking spots available.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, right.
And that's great. And so, and is the plan, like you said, the plan then is to take it down further?
Well, we're not sure. We want to tie it in aesthetically and not to have too much of a slope and all that sort of
right,
stuff. We're going
right,
to
right.
consult with some landscape architects.
Because once you go past that big sort of grassy area, it gets a little bit more difficult to access, right? In terms of where some of that sort of little garden path is down there.
Right, right.
And so that would be harder to expand and then pave or do something with that. But I'm thinking about like what you were saying is, because at least now you can get to the edge of that and be able to look out.
And have a view and a place. I mean, you could even have a wedding ceremony there, the platform, a small one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The ceremony itself, not the reception.
Yeah.
And it's lovely. The harbor's right there, and you can look out over the Chilcats, and it's just...
It's gorgeous. On a beautiful day, it's so nice out there. And so that's really great, because I was just thinking, like, well, wouldn't it be great to get to the left side, you know, down the area over to the left side of the house over there?
Well, eventually we'll do that.
Yeah, that would be kind of great to get as close to the water as possible, right?
This is a public garden.
Yeah.
And we need to make it available to all the public.
Yeah.
And so that was our goal. And... this is just my idea. It's not the friend's idea about what I'm about to say. I think the charm of the Arboretum is that it feels like it could be our backyard up until this point. You know, there was lawns and garden beds and that sort of thing, and we could feel comfortable with maybe that could be our house.
Mm.
But it's a public garden.
Right.
So we need to have more accessibility, hard paved paths and things. So it's going to change the look of the place, but it's going to be accessible, which is much more important.
Which I think is valuable, right?
That's definitely important. Yeah, more people can come.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's pretty great. So tell us a little bit about what's next for the Friends of the Jensen Olsen Arboretum. What other projects do you have schemed up?
Well, we're kind of sitting back going, we're pretty exhausted from the summer since we have lots of stuff going on, but we will be at the public market. That's the next event for us. And then we have a strategic planning session in January, and then we decide what we're going to do. So we've played out our goals for the year. This is this and the public market are our last two events. And I don't know yet.
Right. Well, decided. I guess we'll figure that out in January.
Yeah. We'll have education programs again. We'll have Mother's Day. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I completely forgot. Sorry, Ginger. Next year, we're hosting.
Oh, right.
The Jensen Olsen Arboretum is hosting, and the Friends are helping with the American Primrose Society Annual Conference.
This is a huge deal.
Going to be in Juneau.
Yeah.
And so that's important for primrose lovers, because we have more varieties of primrose anywhere else on the West Coast. And people want to come and look at them and talk about them and study them. And there'll be primrose... competitions, local people, there'll be garden tours for primroses. So it's a big deal. It happens third week of May. So.
Yeah, that's going to be amazing.
Thank you for.
Yeah. No, I'm glad, because I do remember that. We're definitely going to have you all back for that. I'm sure you'll be back before then too.
Yeah.
So we'll see you at Public Market.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where people can find out about maybe how to join the Friends.
Right. Merchandise.
Merchandise.
We'll sell seeds, hats, field guides.
All the good
stickers,
stuff.
Stickers, note cards, those things that support the Friends.
Yeah, yeah. And what is the website for the Friends?
A www. friendsarboretum.org. Let's see. fjarboretum.org.
fjarboretum.org. Okay, got it.
And all that will be on the website.
So. Yeah, that's great. It's so wonderful. And the Friends of the Art Jensen Olsen Arboretum do fantastic work. The Jensen Olsen Arboretum is fantastic. And of course, if you want to help celebrate this accessibility path, you want to get out there next Saturday, not tomorrow, but next Saturday, the 28th at 1 p.m. Sounds like there's going to be refreshments and a cool celebration and you're going to have some speakers and all that kind of stuff.
And fun ribbon cutting. We have a fun thing planned.
Oh, you do? Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, that sounds so great. Well, Pat, thank you so much for coming in and telling us all about it. It's the Friends of the Jensen Olsen Arboretum. It's the Accessibility Path Ribbon Cutting next Saturday at 1 p.m. on the 28th of September. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a fantastic weekend. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Cheesh.